Right now, it's time for The Motley Fool. Since we last spoke with David Gardner, the Dow broke the 3,000 mark. Rupert Murdoch cast a covetous eye on the Wall Street Journal and offered a whole lot more than a dollar an issue cover price. Amazon.com's price jumped. Investors wondered if now was the right time to sell high. And the Spider-Man threequel opens tomorrow. We'll see if that adds any special powers to my fantasy portfolio. And speaking of which, I still have 1,000 imaginary dollars to invest and need some suggestions on where to put it. We'll also take your questions on investment trends, principles to abide by, or how to react to a rising market. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. David Gardner is on the line with us. He's the co-founder of The Motley Fool, and he's in their studio at Global Fool Global Headquarters in Alexandria, Virginia. David, always nice to have you on the program.
Good afternoon, Neil. Happy May.
Happy May. And we're going to check on that fantasy portfolio in a moment. But our legal department insists I remind everyone that neither you nor I will offer advice on whether to buy or sell any particular stock. This is a fantasy portfolio with imaginary money. Believe me, it's not mine. I pick the stocks with guidance from listeners. And since I'm a beginner at this, keep in mind it's all just for fun, not meant to be financial advice. And it will not be a recommendation for or against any investment. So, but let's start with the market as a whole, David. Dow is at record high. The NASDAQ is the highest it's been in 6 years. Is your average investor making money in this market?
Well, I think there's no question the average investor is, because the average investor does hold stocks or maybe at least an index fund through the 401k, Neil. So a lot of us do have participation in this. And while new highs is always big news, let's remind ourselves that over the course of the last century, the Dow Jones Industrial Average went from, 100 points up to 13,000. Hitting new highs is not highly abnormal or necessarily worthy of headlines. It's kind of what happens to the growth of the stock market over time. Well, that said, I'm still happy to be at new highs.
Okay. Here's an email question from Samuel. Given that the Dow is in record territory, how would you advise we look for the inevitable peak and downturn? Should we sell now and return later?
Well, I think the important thing is to ask yourself, why have you invested and what is your goal? For a lot of us, at least for me, I'm 41 years old. I'm looking forward to the next decade, actually the next 4 or 5 decades from the stock market. And I'm going to be the last guy probably who makes a good call in a short-term moment or mode of thinking. So I would encourage that gentleman and really everyone listening to ask yourself, are you invested for the next year, 5 years, or 20 years? And for a lot of us, I think we do well to look past the short term. These days, when I turn on CNBC, I see that they have a clock on the stock graphs. You know, they'll show you a graph of Amazon.com, mm-hmm. and there's the time ticking down by 1/100th of a second. Check it out. I saw it on TV the other day. Is it now the luge? Is that what the stock market is, Neil?
It may be a toboggan anyway. I think that's the more familiar cliche. Let's get back to the important thing, which is, of course, my fantasy portfolio. I checked it around midday today Eastern time, my original $9,000 worth about $9,373 imaginary dollars today. I have to ask you, though, Spider-Man 3 opens tomorrow. I have $1,000 invested in Marvel, but despite some not-so-enthusiastic reviews, the new movie is expected to pull in many millions of dollars at the box office. Is this a good time to buy Marvel?
Well, I would say that I actually did recommend Marvel years ago. It was shortly after Spider-Man 1 had come out, and the stock was actually selling off. Now, this was a tremendous movie. It was a big surprise to a lot of people. You know, could a superhero movie like this perform so well? But in the face of success, the stock was selling off. The stock market is often irrational like that. So I don't think we should necessarily assume that the largest opening of any Spider-Man film, or possibly any film ever, which will happen this weekend, I think, Neil, I don't think we should assume that means Marvel opens up next Monday. I do, however, encourage us to look at the future of Marvel. I like that you have it in your portfolio. It's one of my stocks as well. Everybody has to make our own decisions out there, but Marvel is changing its business model to participate by making movies directly itself. You know, Spider-Man and others have been made by movie houses, big production companies, and Marvel has been getting a check written to them. But starting next year, starting with Iron Man, actually, with Robert Downey Jr. playing the lead role, all of a sudden Marvel will be participating 100%. For or against its successes and its failures. And so that's when it really gets interesting.
All right. Let's see if we can get some listeners in on the conversation. They may have some actual real money invested in stocks, or they're thinking about it. Let's go to Greg. Greg's with us from New Hampshire.
Yeah, how you doing? All right. 56, and I appreciate you taking my call. me and my wife have been pretty frugal. We're our bottom of our pyramid getting bigger and bigger as we get older. our money is going to be going to our children. But what my question is I'm looking around for an upstart high-tech company that's doing research in alternative fuels. So I really think that's going to explode, and I think a newer company would probably return me more money in the long term than someone that, you know, another big oil company that's just doing it a little bit on the side.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering what you thought about that.
And it's a very fine question, and I'm doing the same thing that Greg's doing. I'm looking around for other companies that are participating in what I think is probably a boom here coming for alternative energy, which can take so many forms, as you know, Neil. I mean, it's wind, it's sun, it's even water power. I mean, there's just a lot of different answers out there. One company that I've recommended in the past that I find at least really interesting to look at is called SunTech Power. It is China's maker of solar panels. Just like a lot of other Chinese companies, they can make them really cheap. They're driving down the cost over time. And the amount of sun that is captured and held by these panels, thanks to superior technology, which we as a society do a pretty good job of growing over time, means that they're getting more effective as they get cheaper. So that company today, we're not talking about a really small cap company now. That company is worth $5.5 billion today. And it's STP on the New York Stock Exchange. But if you look at that company, and there are a number of others in the industry, I kind of favor solar just because it feels like once we do it well, it's just so replenishable. I really favor sun.
If I could mention one thing, that's okay, is my wife is a big garden fan, so I bought her solar-powered lights versus electricity, and that saved us a lot of money.
All right. Well,
anyway, I'm delighted to hear that. You know, there are
thanks, Greg.
Certainly, and I should mention, you know, investing it directly in stocks is not even what a lot of Neil, probably your listeners, even want to do. But there are ETFs these days that just buy the whole basket of these companies, and PGW, which is a ticker symbol on the New York Stock Exchange, is an example of that. So you can look around and not make your bet just on one company or one technology, but you can buy a category as well.
All right, you said ETF. What's an ETF?
Oh, I shouldn't have done that. That's an exchange-traded fund. It's just a basket of stocks that you can buy as a single stock. You are, by buying that one stock, owning, just like a mutual fund, control of a whole bunch of different companies. And usually they're flavored, right? You can buy France or buy Sweden. You can buy alternative energy. ETFs these days are very popular because people can just buy sectors at a whole swipe.
All right. As long as we're on definitions, here's an email question from Arlene. If a single stock is rated as overweight, what does that mean?
Well, often it's the analyst actually who rates the stock in my experience. But I think what that analyst means to say is that within your portfolio, you should, assuming you have, let's say, 20 different investments, you should tend to overweight the amount of money that you would put in that particular investment. Whether or not you agree with the analyst or whether the analyst is good or not is a separate question. But I think that's what's intended by that particular Wall Street term.
Let's go to David. David's with us from here in Washington.
Washington State.
Actually. Oh, Washington State. Excuse me.
Clear across the continent.
Yep.
Hey, Neil, I had a suggestion for you, and perhaps your guest can say whether this is a good one. Take some of your $1,000 to invest and put it in a mutual fund that invests in companies that are environmentally responsible, or split it up and pick one stock of a company just to see how they perform compared to your run-of-the-mill stocks.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are plenty of these mutual funds that are variously describe themselves as green, or I guess they say, you know, zero carbon footprint these days. David Gardner, what do you think?
Well, there are a lot of companies, and you know, one of the things that I do is I like to think in terms of groups and categories, and environmentally friendly companies is actually one of the things we track on the Motley Fool at our site CAPS. You can click on the tag environmentally friendly and find about 14, 15 companies that our community, using community intelligence, believes, having researched them, that they are environmentally friendly. And then you can sort them and look which are the higher rated ones. But I think overall, it's worth noting that not all of these technologies are the same. And so while the ETF will buy all of it, in many cases, we start looking at the balance sheet of the company, see if they have more cash than debt. Do they actually have any sales at all? There are a lot of fly-by-night companies that are going to rush when they hear ethanol is a big thing and the government is subsidizing it. All of a sudden, you know, they're taking their company public that's going to be an ethanol company too. So there's sometimes some Me Too action that you have to avoid.
Mm-hmm. David, thanks very much for the advice.
All right. How do they perform as a rule compared to the run-of-the-mill stocks?
Well, you know, it's actually very hard in this particular instance, David, to answer that question, because a lot of these companies, depending on what we mean by environmentally friendly, you might agree or disagree that, you know, a company like Whole Foods Market, would that, for example, be considered an environmentally friendly company? For a lot of people,
they would say yes.
Okay, and other people would say, well, that's not an energy company. We're talking about kind of, you know, the effect on the environment here. And so I've sometimes said in the past that eBay, I consider them environmentally friendly because you and I, by selling secondhand goods to each other, are making it unnecessary for additional production to happen. We're recycling, aren't we? You end up with a real debate about what exactly is environmentally friendly and what isn't. But in the end, I think that you have a good idea, and I would encourage you to pursue it and look for companies that you understand.
David, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We're talking with the Motley Fool, David Gardner, with us from Fool Global Headquarters in Alexandria, Virginia. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And a big news story this week. Obviously, the newspaper business has been in some decline over the past several years. Rupert Murdoch made a $5 billion bid for Dow Jones & Company, which publishes The Wall Street Journal, among other things. Is this a time to be looking at newspapers as a good investment?
Well, I think when you understand what Fox is hoping to do, which is to launch a successful business news cable channel in competition with CNBC, you might see, if you have the strategic mind that I think Rupert Murdoch has actually demonstrated that he does have over the last 20 years, you might see that it's a good thing, potentially, to have the Wall Street Journal be a significant brand for you and your network. And so I think that is strategic thinking. It certainly has not been a great business, Neil, as you alluded to earlier, the newspaper business. A lot of it has been in decline or just sort of steady state, but no real growth. But the Wall Street Journal, at least in Rupert Murdoch's mind, is worth 60% more than the stock market was according it in its value just last week. So usually when investors and shareholders see an attractive premium price like that, they jump at it. In this case, as you well know, it was not necessarily welcomed. It was an external offer, and shareholders will have to consider it. I know one thing. If I were a shareholder, I'd be taking that deal.
Moving from old media to new, Amazon.com jumped from about $45 to over $60 in just a matter of a few days. If you held stock in Amazon, would this be a time to consider the old adage, sell high?
Well, and here I have to issue a disclaimer because I am a shareholder of Amazon. It does enable me briefly to brag, Neil, because I've actually just bought and held ever since back in the day. So, you know, a stock I bought at 3, it went to 95, I didn't sell. It went down to 7, I didn't sell. And today, as you mentioned, it's about 60. You end up with days where if you hold and show patience as an investor, if you know the company, you trust the management, and you like the growth story, you hold for a decade, you'll have days where the stock will rise more in a single day than you paid for your cost basis. And I'm happy, at least in my little disclaimer here, and we fools make lots of mistakes too, so I don't want to sound like a braggart, but I will say that when the stock went up $10 the other day, that was 3 times what I paid for it 10 years ago. Would I sell? No, I'm not going to sell my Amazon. And I would suggest you don't have to go out and buy it, but any company that can grow its sales 32% this March quarter just closed, you know, from $2.2 to almost $3 billion. I mean, that's stacking on a tremendous amount of growth in its 10th, 12th year of business. I think, you know, they're starting to sell Starbucks coffee. They're adding groceries, kind of what Walmart did, you know, recently to its business about 10 years ago. Now, as you know, Walmart's the number one grocer in America. But I just think Amazon is so smart, and they have a lot of potential. Amazon Prime, you know, you're paying $79 a year to get free shipping on most of the stuff on Amazon. Sounds a lot like Costco to me.
Whoops, we've just lost our connection to Fool Global Headquarters in Alexandria, Virginia. So we'll check into what's keeping us from Dave Gardner's wise advice. In the meantime, we're going to continue to take calls. There's a question here from Beth. Beth calling us from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi. I just got married last year.
I'm still with you.
Okay. We have Beth on the line, so let's let her put out her question, David.
Hi. I just got married last Saturday.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And my husband and I got $15,000 as a wedding present. And so we want to know what we should do with it.
Ah, I've spoken with Dave Gardner before, and somehow the words index fund are swimming through my mind.
Well, that's a great question. First of all, I want to celebrate people who give non-traditional gifts. I like money and stock as gifts at weddings. I think it is a wonderful long-term minded kind of a gift. And yeah, I think that what Neil has just said is a great answer, in fact, because I think that for a lot of us, unless we're going to be fans of the stock market, actively engaged and students of the game, doesn't mean you have to be a trader. I'm certainly not. But if you're not actually, if it's not a great big fun board game for you, which it is for me, then I think that the index fund is a wonderful way to start a $15,000 investment for over the course of your long lives together. I think it's a tremendous way to put it in. When you buy an index fund, you're just owning the overall stock market. We talked a little bit earlier about exchange-traded funds, and these days you don't have to buy the index fund. Isn't just the S&P 500, which, as you may know, is the 500 largest companies in America. These days you can buy a foreign index fund. You can buy global index funds. So I don't want to over-confuse the matter here. If you just bought an S&P 500 index fund for a very low price, Vanguard, for example, is a good name. There are others, too, that offer very cheap index funds. You'll be paying low in fees, and you'll just let it grow over time. It's a great way to start a nest egg.
Beth, good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
And congratulations.
Dave Gardner, thank you very much, as always.
Neil, I really enjoyed it. Fool on.
Dave Gardner, co-founder of The Motley Fool. He joins us every month for a look at the markets. We'll update my fantasy portfolio. You can track it online. There's a link at our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.